This podcast is sponsored by Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management, award-winning wealth managers who go above and beyond to support and guide you. Visit candowealth.com to start building your wealth with confidence.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Harman and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Katie Balls, and we have just come out of Boris Johnson's speech to the Conservative Party conference. James, what did you make of it?
I mean, the best way I can sum it up is it was the most Boris Johnson speech possible. When Boris Johnson was Foreign Secretary, he tried at least to kind of vaguely conform to some of the conventions about, you know, how Foreign Secretaries speak. This speech had no such limitations. It was almost like a kind of greatest hits version of Boris Johnson's columns. It included jokes I don't think any other Prime Minister would have tried to pull off Build Back Beaver. And it was very upbeat. It was all about this new kind of centre ground of British politics that he wants to carve out, where the Tory party, you know, so is how he wants to sprawl across the centre ground. The Tory party are the party of the NHS, party of the free market economy, the party of, you know, you name it, he wants to claim that they're the party of it. I think the biggest political risk in the speech is he is giving this speech as gas prices have surged again. I was writing in my politics column for the magazine this coming out on Thursday, available in all good news agents, how gas was now trading for the first time at over 300 pence a therm. I was just looking now at the proof came through, and I think we are now getting close to or over 400 pence a therm. This is a remarkable rise. It's going to have real consequences, and there was no attempt to prepare the country for what could be a very hard autumn or winter. The only recognition of problems ahead was when he said, look, the NHS waiting list is going to get worse before it gets better. But in terms of the cost of living, in terms of how much energy is going to cost this winter, and the supply chain shortages and all those, like, there was no attempt to do that. And so I think that is the biggest political risk of a speech. But I think, you know, I think that Boris Johnson is basically betting that he has got this far in politics with his approach. You know, he had a torrid time as Foreign Secretary when he tried to kind of conform, and so he's going to carry on being him.
Katie, there is a risk, as James says, that Boris Johnson does come across as a bit delusional if, as all expectations suggest, this winter is going to be very, very difficult. So was the speech partly also aimed at just trying to buoy up the Conservative Party just to get through those troubled times?
I think it was a rallying speech, and it was clearly aimed at firing up the base. I think that we've seen Boris Johnson be a little bit tetchy in various media appearances over the past few days, and I think that this is very much, you know, the Boris Johnson that Tory activists and also members of his cabinet like to see: Boris Johnson having fun, Boris Johnson saying things that other people couldn't get away with, perhaps wouldn't even think to say. And as James says, almost approaching greatest hits in that sense. It didn't have much in terms of new policy. It didn't really, shed much light on things like levelling up. Again, you know, chucking a few things in, talking about his ambitions. But I didn't think it was particularly more, you know, a laser like focus on that. I think probably the most interesting hint we got in terms of the direction the government was on planning, where it did feel as though Boris Johnson had moved quite far away from talking about the most radical planning shake-up, and instead was talking about preserving beauty in the countryside and how levelling up could be good for you if you live in the south, because people will go to the north, so, and that will mean less pressure. So I think when we were looking at the thrust of the speech, it was more about, you know, this is the first time he has addressed his party in person since he won the majority of 80. And I think it was reminding people why he is an election winner, why they back him for that reason. As for, you know, is it to fire up the base ahead of a tricky few months? I think it was, clearly it's helpful if it does that. But I do think we have to remember this is just the first time he has been with his party, because the last event was cancelled, obviously, because of COVID. And it was, you know, kind of a message to them, and not much in terms of policy, but I think he'll be broadly happy of how that went and the whole was.
James, Katie mentioned that there wasn't much in the way of policy. There was one new announcement, and it was very, very small, which was a £3,000 levelling up premium to attract science, technology and maths teachers and so on to schools that were unpopular, to struggling schools in unpopular areas. It's not exactly a sort of defining policy, is it?
Yeah, it's a perfectly sensible policy that will work at the margins. I think one of the problems is that £3,000 is not a life-changing amount of money. for teachers. And also, if you look at the, there is something called the London effect in teaching, which is if you look at it logically, from a purely kind of homo economicus perspective, you would expect that London would have real trouble attracting teachers because the London waiting for teachers is not that great. So teachers in relative terms are paid less in London than they would be to take a place that the Tories like to talk about a lot, Blackpool, for example. But the challenge is that London attracts a very high caliber of teachers because in most relationships these days both partners work, and so therefore the attraction of London is that, you know, if you are a teacher in London, you can be pretty confident that your partner will be able to do the job of the profession that they are trained to do in London. In other parts of the country, you can be less sure of that. So I think that is the challenge. I mean, I think it would need to be considerably larger in terms of money to have a really big impact. So, but I also thought it was kind of telling that this speech wasn't pretending to be a speech about policy. I think it was, and again, that's what I mean about it being very him. You know, there's a kind of diagnosis of a problem, and he tells you what he thinks is wrong, where he wants to get to, but how you're going to get there, that was left very unclear in the speech. And I think it's interesting, and this is, I think, it's one of the other dangers for him, which is, you know, his constant emphasis right now is on delivery. But what are the mechanisms and the tools by which he hopes to deliver these changes? He's very much saying, essentially, you know, and there's the cabinet, they'll do that stuff. I think that the challenge is, you know, they will need to show some discernible signs that they are making progress on these things. And, you know, they have set up this new delivery unit in Downing Street led by Emily Lawson, who did a lot of the vaccine rollout, to try and ensure that there is progress made on this. But I think, you know, this speech, as Katie said, he could give this speech because this is the first time the Tory party has met since he won that 80-seat majority. But the longer time goes on, the more there will have to be proof points to the policy or to the prescription.
Katie, do you think it's going to be possible for the Conservatives to campaign on their levelling up achievements in a couple of years' time at an election, given there's been nothing announced this week that suggests anything particularly more concrete than the fact that Michael Gove has worked out what it means?
If he has worked out what it means. When you press... I think that when it comes to levelling up in the next election, realistically, the really tricky stuff is not going to be done by the time of the next election. So when it comes to things that Boris Johnson likes to throw in, like life expectancy, you know, bridging the gap there, education, improving grades. I mean, we do have great inflation, so perhaps he would be able to say that. But those things are long-term projects. I think in terms of the next election, it's probably more the gimmicky stuff. So, for example, you know, when you're talking about moving parts of government departments to areas in the Midlands and the North, I also think free ports is something where you can, you know, have a quick win. And I think that's probably more what it's going to look like. But I think the idea is if you can point to a few things like that, then you give voters enough to say, well, we've done this already, so just keep, you know, looking on. I did get the sense in Boris Johnson's speech, you know, it was just so filled with slogans and, you know, his jargon phrases. So, you know, build back better. We had build back beaver, as was touched on. And we've got these Twitter adverts saying build back better, I think, and that's Boris Johnson eating fish and chips in them. And obviously thrusting levelling up all over the place into that speech, saying that Labour were levelling down. I think it's quite clear that Boris Johnson just thinks if you chuck these slogans out enough, they will start to be embedded in people's minds, a bit like we saw in the EU referendum. And yes, he obviously does need to have policy to back it, but I think if we look at where Boris Johnson has succeeded in the past, he hasn't always needed to have the policy. So I think you almost said this is a heavy sprinkling of these slogans, and the point that in itself, I mean, they gain momentum.
I mean, in terms of the other thing, in terms of levelling up and what might happen, one of the gambles the Tories have taken this week is that, you know, Boris Johnson's basically said, look, these labour shortages, they are going to lead to higher wages. And, you know, and I think if this doesn't trigger inflation, and if he can go to the country and say, look, you know, in 2016 I told you that wages would rise if we left the EU because we would end free movement and that would push up wages for British workers, and that's happened, that gives him something to deliver for that electoral coalition that backed him in 2016 and 2019. But again, the risk is that by talking about these labour shortages has almost been part of the plan. You know, he now has much greater ownership of the supply chain issues that might flare up again between now and Christmas than he would have done before. And also, again, you know, I was boring on earlier about gas prices, right? You know, if you look
never
at
never boring, James.
If you look at what is happening with energy prices, then it is quite easy to see how that could really trigger inflation. And also, if energy prices carry on like this, I don't think we're that far off companies saying, "Well, I'm shutting our factory down because." With energy prices at this height, it's simply not economic to produce this stuff, which I think, again, would cause a problems for the government because, you know, people are not ready and expecting that right now.
Katie, what about his attacks on Labour? Last week, Keir Starmer described Boris Johnson as a trivial man, and as well as trying to compete with the Labour leader on poetry quotes, Boris Johnson had a few words of his own to say. Let's hear a clip of them now.
In previous national crises, Labour leaders have opted to minimise public anxiety and confusion by not trying to score cheap party political points. One thinks of Attlee or even Michael Foot in the Falklands crisis. And sadly, that was not the approach taken by Captain Hindsight, attacking one week, rowing in behind it when it seemed to be working, the human weather vane, the Starmer chameleon. And in his final absurd act of opportunism, he decided to oppose step four. He opposed step four of the roadmap in July, remember? That's right, folks. If we listened to Captain Hindsight today, we'd still be in lockdown. We wouldn't have the fastest growth in the G7. If Columbus had listened to Captain Hindsight, he'd be famous for having discovered Tenerife.
We had a whole range. I mean, Keir Starmer, as you say, just went for almost the one barb, and then also, I think he had one other joke in the speech, didn't he, saying that his father was a toolmaker and so was Boris Johnson's. Whereas Boris Johnson gave us multiple examples of things that we should compare Keir Starmer with. One was, you know, a confused bus conductor, one struggling with the Labour left. We also had, you know, a pirate ship. And then, you know, this idea that he would be, you know, useless in various ways if he was thrust into popular culture situations. And I think the general sense of all the, you know, the theme brought together is this idea that Keir Starmer is rudderless, doesn't have good political judgment, is all over the place in flip-flops. And I thought it was interesting also just going into lockdown, because we were seeing Boris Johnson, I think, try to tell his party that despite tax rises and, you know, all that's happened in the past year or so, he is still, you know, a conservative politician leading a conservative government. And one way they did this is on the pandemic, and I was quite struck when Boris Johnson almost suggested, you know, if you had Keir Starmer, you would still be in lockdown. So I think it was all adding to the sense that they were opportunistic, and also when they are opportunistic, they make the wrong decisions.
Finally, I have a little test for each of you, starting with James. If you could sum up the speech in a headline or in one sentence, what would it be? What do you think the front pages are going to have tomorrow? How's the 6 o'clock news going to lead on this speech?
I think the BBC will lead on it as Boris the Optimist paints upbeat vision, but gas prices spike, or something like that, you know, or universal credit cut kicks in. I think it'll be something like that. I mean, if you were looking for a kind of, this is why I would never get to be a sub-editor on a national newspaper, but, you know, it's almost that Boris Johnson doubles down on being Boris Johnson. It was the most Boris Johnson speech imaginable, and I think that his fans will love it and his critics will be exasperated and driven wild by it, because it was so him, it was so the persona and the approach that has got him to where he is today.
Katie?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with James. I think that we could see some headlines about Boris Johnson and culture wars, because it was interesting in that speech when he was talking about how you have to, you know, you can't rewrite history. And I think the language, it seemed to me as though he is walking a little bit more towards that as a topic.
Attack on cancel culture.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Attacking cancel culture. And I think, therefore, you know, Boris Johnson stokes culture wars could be, you know, something we start to hear more of. But I think in terms of the general theme of that speech, for me, I'm struck a few weeks ago, I had a government advisor say to me of Boris Johnson, you know, he's in world king mode. It was Boris Johnson's ambition, I think, when he was four, to be world king. And I do think at this conference, we have seen, you know, the first Tory party conference in, what, 4 or 5 years, where the Tories are not in an internal crisis of their own. Boris Johnson's position is very secure. I think it was, adding to the optics of that, you know, number 10 want to press that point. We've had a small hall, but all the cabinet ministers have given speeches this week. It's been quite flat. We got a different hall for Boris Johnson, you know. It was more like a rally, and I think it was to make the point, you know, that he is unchallenged and he has control of his party. But I think, as we touched on this podcast, it's just the question is, for how long is the political weather in his favour?
Well, we can hear behind us the sounds of the Conservative Party conference being dismantled. James, a final thought?
Yeah, I think it's quite clear from this conference season that the biggest danger to Boris Johnson is not the Labour Party, it's not some internal rival in his own party, it is events. And, you know, as long as they don't go against him, he will be all right. But he has taken some risks at this conference because he is not, you know, embracing these labour shortages as proof of how wages are going to rise. And also, he's not trying to use this conference to prepare the public or for a difficult autumn and winter to come. But I think, you know, it's quite clear from this conference that he is quite happily, you know, colonised a huge amount of centre ground, isn't planning to move off that, and he's not going to give Labour any space. You know, the Boris Johnson rubric that you've got to outflank him, you have to go really quite far to the left on the economy or really quite far to the right on the culture. That remains true at the end of this conference season. And Keir Starmer had made some progress in terms of handling his own party, but in terms of getting to compete with the electorate against Boris Johnson, I don't think the conference season has changed that dynamic at all.
Katie, before the building is closed and our chairs are taken away from us, what's your final thought?
Yeah, I think it's just Boris Johnson in world king mode, and it is now down to, you know, cost of living crisis. I think is something that's very tricky for Boris Johnson. It's quite hard to spin your way out of. You can't really say it's a Westminster bubble story that no one cares about if everyone feels it. And therefore, I think it's about, do comments this week, such as, you know, this idea that inflation is misfounded, these concerns, do they come back to haunt him? Because if things do start to go wrong, like it's going to be something that so many people feel, I think that's going to pose its biggest challenge.
It sounds like they're now smashing glasses behind us, so we will leave the convention centre before we're thrown out. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. Thank you, James, and thank you, Katie.